Welcome everyone to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. Okay, we are in paper 54, section 4, which is right there at the bottom of old single column, page 615. Okay, so the main thing to paper 54, section 4. Look it up that way. Main thing that we need to remind ourselves of where we were when we left off last time. Remember how it was ending up there at the end of section 3. Remember how we were talking about how the Ancients of Days, as the capital J judges, are handling, in general, issues of someone going to iniquity. And you know, getting to that point where they're actually going to have the executioners eliminate the body when that individual's made that final choice and is no longer a person. Remember how that last sentence goes there. Let me just read that again in section 3. And the Ancients of Days refuse to annihilate any being until all moral values and all spiritual realities are extinct, both in the evildoer and in all related supporters and possible sympathizers. Probably recall that. So that very sweeping statement seemingly hard to even imagine exactly what the limitations are on that mercy. You know, when they say things like all possible sympathizers, it seems very open-ended. But remember, I stressed they're stating the rule there. But there's always exceptions to rules, and we'll see that coming up in the next section here. Notice the titles of the two sections, Time Lag of Justice and the Mercy Time Lag. You've got that fundamental twofold contrast, twofold interaction between applied law, justice, on one end, and applied love, mercy, on the other end, and exactly what is the balance that's going to be in play in any given circumstance. So, you know, really, these two sections are in many ways about the same issue. But as you'll see when we read this first paragraph, they're putting a little bit of a slight twist in the focus on it as they shift into this next section here. So let's just jump in, just read that first little paragraph, and I'll show you what I mean by that.
Section 4, the Mercy Time Lag. Another problem somewhat difficult of explanation is the constellation of Nerlashadech pertains to the reasons for permitting Lucifer, Satan, and the falling princes to work mischief so long before being apprehended, interned, and adjudicated.
Okay, so you go, what? Okay, I mean, why such a tiny little statement to start off the section? So you notice the way it's starting, another problem. So they must be wanting you to be contrasting with some other statement they made. You know, look at right at the beginning of the previous section, where they talked about all moral will creatures of the evolutionary worlds are always bothered with the unthinking question as to why the all-wise creators permit evil and sin. So the first question was just that general thing of permitting, or so it appears, evil and sin. Remember, we talked about that. I mean, they don't really permit that. Just appears that way. That's why they said unthinking question. But we have another element of that in that quote-unquote permitting category. This permitting the rebels to run free. See, so that's the basic contrast. So they're initially focusing in that very general, more abstract space, and now they're focusing in specifically on of course not just on the rebels in our system rebellion, but rebels in general. Anywhere at any time, about how much time they're given before at least they're interned, let alone eventually adjudicated and then perhaps eventually exterminated. I see. So that's the main key. But you can see again, it's a problem somewhat difficult of explanation because you're undoubtedly dealing with some very big picture that very few people have the scope of recognition to fully appreciate why things are in the biggest sense of that very big picture. But remember, it's always going to be some very holistic decision, like we focused on an awful lot in the last session. Over and over again, we kept bringing up that issue of not thinking in terms of parts, but in terms of the whole. And there's a holistic phenomenon to the rebellion, and it has to work out in its wholeness. That's clearly going to take some time. Okay, so they just wanted to note that one little thing up front. Okay, and then they give us some more here.
Parents, those who have born and reared children, are better able to understand why Michael, a creator father, might be slow to condemn and destroy his own sons. Jesus' story of the prodigal son well illustrates how a loving father can long wait for the repentance of an erring child.
Okay, so kind of another little tidbit. There's a number of just little tidbits they're giving us here to digest. All right, so just they want you to focus in on something that you can possibly relate to. But you notice how qualified they are there. Parents, comma, at least those who have born and reared children. So born and reared. Because they're telling you that only in that fullness of sort of tangibility for us, might you begin to fully appreciate just how intimate a relationship the Creator's Son has to, those individuals that he, literally, immediately, directly is involved in the creation of, like these Lenonindex sons. They're trying to get at a level of intimacy that we really can't fully appreciate, obviously. But if you're short of born and reared, they're telling you that you're gonna have a hard time even getting remotely close to the kind of identification that Creator Son feels. And obviously you can reflect on the, on the flip side of that, those human individuals that don't bear, rear, those sorts of we definitely have people who don't go that far, and so certainly it's going to be very difficult for them to understand the kind of intimate connection that the Creator Son has, and the Creator Mother Spirit also, of course. But they're immediately focusing in on the Creator Son. side of the parenting here. All right. So anyway, just just notice how they're, like we've pointed out many times, if you see them breaking things into little paragraphs, they're wanting you to pause on just that little nugget and really reflect on precisely why that little element is important to appreciate. Obviously, as I was just saying, since it's going to be very hard for us, don't expect to be able to not have a lot of lingering questions about this issue, for this specific issue. Why was, Lucifer allowed to go as long as he was before he was rounded up, and then Satan was allowed to go even longer, et cetera. We're always going to have nagging issues about that. As you'll see as we get towards the end of this paper, that'll come back around, that those sorts of questions don't go away anytime soon. The author of the paper kind of gives some personal testimonial about that. Okay, let's get this other little nugget here.
The very fact that an evil-doing creature can actually choose to do wrong, commit sin, establishes the fact of free willness and fully justifies any length, delay in the execution of justice, provided the extended mercy might conduce to repentance and rehabilitation.
Okay. Now again, it seems to be fairly straightforward, but it's obviously there's something that he wants you to penetrate on, just very focused fashion. This is reminding you of the point that I brought up at the end of the previous section. Remember when we read that those last two paragraphs of the previous section, and I was pointing out, it's like, okay, so there's what it says on its face about what has to occur before the divine executioners have their way with the situation. But I was pointing out, what's the real kind of physics underlying that? Remember I was pointing out that they purposely were using the word heart, to remind you that, yes, you, the hourglass analogy of your mind, that upper domain, that heart, quote unquote, may be totally devoid of meaning and value because, technically you've gone to iniquity. The individual you're considering has gone to iniquity, so they've emptied it of any real substance. But there is still that domain. There is still that encirclement in the Holy Spirit that is the means for bestowing the literal capacity of that domain. That bestowal of capacity and the identification of personality to that capacity, that's still there until that final choice to evaporate that. The choice to no longer be personal, to evaporate the vessel, like I said, if you will, that has been emptied, but to get rid of the vessel itself. See what they're saying here. This whole bit about the very fact that an evil-doing creature can actually choose to do wrong, commit sin, establishes the fact of free willness. Right? If there's free willness, right, if there's personality identified, even if it's down to that last little moment, there is still free willness. See, and the fact of free willness, as they're saying here, fully justifies any length delay in the execution of justice. So that paragraph is, if you reflect on it, is really validating what I was pointing out about the, the between the lines meaning in that previous section, at the end of the previous section there. Does that make sense to everyone? But again, we seem to be in this mode where it seems very open-ended, fully justifies any length delay, and you're going, well, that doesn't sound qualified to me. Okay. But like I said, in just a little bit here, we'll speak to that issue about properly understanding the context of these statements that they're making. But in some way or another, they're speaking about a circumstance where it is very much open-ended. Any length of lay is justified. You got to kind of love that use of the word conduce to repentance and rehabilitation too. You know that it's it's sort of the literal means, the conduit through which. Just trying to get you to think, very literally about these issues again of mercy, love. They're not just abstract concepts with no substance to them, so they often speak in more literal terms like that to remind you of just, like I said, there's a physics, there's a literal nature to what we're talking about here, as I was trying to bring out in that last section. Yeah?
I don't think I've ever heard the word conduce used.
Yeah, it's definitely a word that you don't often hear, but it's, just that literal leading with it's speaking literally to something that is guiding a phenomenon along, like a conductor, like a wire, guiding the current along a path. As I was saying, to say it like that, gives it a very literal image, or should. Okay, as opposed to just sort of, humans are so used to words like repentance, rehabilitation, whatnot, being some sort of just arbitrary, whatever, with nothing, no literal physics, to the phenomenon. It's some sort of someone's notion, God's notion or someone's notion. But we all know that the Revelation is trying to get us away from thinking that there isn't a literalness to everything. Okay, what else we have here?
Most of the liberties which Lucifer sought, he already had. Others, he was to receive in the future. All these precious endowments were lost by giving way to impatience and yielding to a desire to possess what one craves now and to possess it in defiance of all obligation to respect the rights and liberties of all other beings composing the universe of universes. Ethical obligations are innate, divine, and universal.
Okay, so here you see, again, a very direct expression of something you hear me bring up constantly. It's not just me vamping on the content, there's always some place where it's given quite direct expression. See right in the middle of that paragraph, yielding to a desire to possess what one craves now. What do we want? Fill in the blank. When do we want it? Now. Right? The ubiquitous chant of the idealist. Right? And think about how they're trying to challenge you, when you go into that mode. You have a strong tendency to be very self-oriented in that mode as a immature child of God. Right? And to possess it in defiance of all obligation to respect the rights and liberties of all other beings composing the universe of universes. For instance, there's someone else in your community that isn't holding that sign. What do we want? Fill in the blank. When do we want it now? They may want that, but they don't want it now. They've got a different perspective on it. Well, you call them stupid or unenlightened, right, or something. You don't respect that. It's like, well, if you don't want it now, you can't expect me to have any respect for you. Anyone who's enlightened wants it now. No, anyone who's immature, you know, thinks that they're the dictator of when things are appropriately, you know, to manifest. And they're trying to remind of, you know, fundamentally why this book is in my lap. What is the emergency? We have all of these spiritually conscious people who have no humility and are going off in very self-righteous modes, not just self-righteous in some grand sense where, you know, you're not thinking in terms of, well, maybe there's a God and maybe God has a plan and things all have their time and place, but you don't even respect, you know, your fellow person. They're a free will being too. They're just as much child of God as you. And who's to say their sense of when something should happen isn't the correct one rather than yours, you know, where you want it now. You know, most likely, if they see the validity of the ideal you're putting forward, but say, but I don't think right now is appropriate, they probably have a more balanced consciousness than you do. Right? They're bringing their spiritual idealism, their material pragmatism together into some greater balance. Right? They aren't going way off on that existential side, you know, and thinking ideals can just be applied directly, that there is no time, there, you know, eternity, it can be just existent directly, and, you know, and these sorts of absolutizing, existentializing sorts of tendencies that you always have, these impatient and self-righteous tendencies that you always have if you don't have that balance. You know, so, you know, definitely if someone acknowledges the ideal, you should maybe give them some consideration about maybe they have a better sense of the timing of things than you do, when it would be better for something to happen. But even more, you know, what if they don't even acknowledge that ideal? Are they to be dismissed as you know, as having thoughts that are of no value? You know, again, see, you can get very self-centered and self-righteous about this, and you know, and dismiss someone that doesn't want to hold that sign, even if they don't want it now. And see, that's what they're getting at. Remember, that was the whole point that they were bringing up in the previous paper a lot too, as you know, besides this one, about how you know, Lucifer ultimately is trying to declare himself to be the whole, and all parts are only valid in his wholeness, right? That self-righteousness like that.
Again, not to beat a dead horse, mm-hmm. but Lucifer, this is a high spiritual being. You just, I still have a difficult time getting my mind around the fact that he could fall so get so off track with all his training, his thousands of years of existence.
A lot more than thousands.
He's not some slug who lives next door to you.
Yeah.
This is a high celestial being. Yet he fell into this morass.
This trap of self.
Yeah.
Right? And again, it's just because, you know, he's relatively, you know, high compared to us. I mean, obviously he isn't very high, because he can fall into this trap,
apparently.
Right? So, I mean, that, you know, obviously limits how quote-unquote high he is, the fact that he can go down an iniquitous tangent like this. But again, you know, it reminds you of, you know, they just used it there, the fact of free willness. Free will is free will. And it's going to take a very high level of innate integrity before that free will, you know, that personality, which has an absolute dimension to it, yeah, before that potential free willness you know, can't ignorantly go astray. I mean, it's got an absolute dimension. That's, you know, it's just reminding you of you know, a Lenonidic son is, you know, their nature, their, you know, the nature of their self that's personalized. That self is not some absolute self, right? It's not even an absentite self, right? It's just a finite self, not that different than our finite selves. An absolute dimension of free willness can certainly have its way with a lowly finite self. You know, if it wants to take it off on a false tangent, off on a false tangent, it's going to go. So, you know, that's sort of bottom line. What this is trying to get you to appreciate is just what power is put in your hands, what kind of a trust the Father places in everyone upon whom he bestows personality. Right? You know, there's a sacred trust there that you can violate. And it's going to have huge consequences because it's a sacred trust. So, yeah, just, I mean, all you have to do is just kind of try to imagine a much more sophisticated mind, but basically the same, you know, that greater sophistication is of no consequence in the face of the destructivity potential of personality. Right? Bigger they are, the harder they fall. Right? You know, that's the fundamental thing that, you know, one has to wrap their mind around. You know, the much more complicated question is what we're dealing with in, you know, in this section. Okay, so yeah, they can go to iniquity. I guess I can figure that out now. But, you know, why let them, you know, have free reign for 200,000 years? Right? That question. Was there something on the webinar that we needed to address?
John Stevens commented, he said he succumbed to the initiating urge of self, not the achievement of deity liberation.
Yeah, I mean, like I said a minute ago, I mean, it's always that bottom line. It's self-exaltation, you know, culminating in self-love, you know, a self-admiration that knows no bounds. And you know, the more you fall in love with yourself, the more your partness will appear to be wholeness. See, that's just, it just goes hand in hand. When you fall in love with yourself, you know, you seem to be everything. Right? And you just, that's what falling in love with yourself means, right? Is seeing yourself as a wholeness rather than a part that has to be humbly subservient to some overarching wholeness that you need to synchronize with, you know, and give due consideration to all the other parts within, you know, that wholeness. Okay, let's see, what else do we have there? Yeah, back to that other paragraph that we just read. Let's see. Right, so, you know, as we've talked about, Lucifer, you know, in the same way for Kalagastia on this planet, you know, they're both wanting to skip all of the evolutionary process and jump right to the end point of light and life, you know, and all of the sovereignty and liberties that they and others, you know, have at that advanced stage, you know, obviously predicated on the recognition of personal responsibility and the exercise of self-control that is light and life, but forgetting that, right? And just assuming that you don't need to have that, you just are innately divine, and hence you are in light and life by definition, right? It's nothing you have to evolve to. But all that was lost, again, by giving way to impatience. Right? They're just stressing that again, as we know, that key element that gets you going off on a tangent is the lack of patience. And that's fundamentally, why do you have that lack of patience? Because you are biased to your spiritual consciousness, your unity consciousness side. It's not properly balanced. It's not properly tempered, brought into relationship with time. Right? It's thinking too existentially. Doesn't want to have some temporal process. It wants it by fiat right now. Right? That's your spiritual consciousness, you know, going off unbridled. And then, like they said, completely rejecting any sort of ethical obligations. But like they're saying there, that isn't something that ethical obligations aren't just some silly thing that humans have dreamt up. Right? Ethical obligations are innate, divine, and universal. You know, so even if you begin to understand the difference between moral and ethical, like we've talked about some, and that starts to make sense, and you kind of recognize that you have that that higher fact of moral that's brought down into relationship with the details, the specifics of others as an ethical expression. That doesn't mean that that ethical expression is somehow less divine. You know, they're trying to stress that, or less universal. It certainly initially sounds a lot more universal to say your moral duty is your duty to the cosmos, right? The universal harmony. That's, as opposed to saying your duty to others, your ethical duty. You know, it initially sounds like the moral is more universal. So they're trying to remind you, no. Right? Others go to the same bounds as the universal harmony. There's others everywhere. It's a universe of universes full of inhabitants. So they're just trying to get you to not inappropriately diminish ethical relative to moral there. All right. So that's, obviously as much time as I just spent on it. I mean, that's so much kind of the biggie that everyone should be able to understand. It happens around you all the time. Every time there's a protest march, you see this. You see individuals that are falling into that impatient trap that unwittingly is them beginning to move down the path of the Lucifer Rebellion. Every time you see that, that's a warning sign that you should note now. They're trying to get us to know these things, to catch ourselves being impatient like that, and learn to be humble, in the big picture. And don't think that you know what's best. If you get a significant degree of self-mastery in play, conformity with the cosmos, you will naturally fit in to the processes of the evolving cosmos. You can have a part, and an effective part, in helping things move forward, but you're not in charge of the moving forwardness of the universe. The Supreme is, and you're trying to make yourself a useful potential element in that process, taking us to places that are much more profound than anything you can imagine, are literally things that you can't imagine. Right? The destiny of the grand universe is completely beyond our imagination. So for us to think that we know what should happen right now, to make that all happen in the end, I mean, it's just absurd when you think about it like that. I mean, as if little blob of protoplasm me could know such things. All right. Okay, so now let's get into this, a little bit more into this issue of that I told you picks up on. So we have this rule about any length delay, etc. Are there any exceptions to that?
There are many reasons known to us why the Supreme Rulers did not immediately destroy or intern the leaders of the Lucifer Rebellion. There are no doubt still other and possibly better reasons unknown to us. The mercy features of this delay in the execution of justice were extended personally by Michael of Nebadon. Except for the affection of this Creator Father for his erring sons, the supreme justice of the super universe would have acted. If such an episode as the Lucifer Rebellion had occurred in Nebadon, while Michael was incarnated on Urantia, the instigators of such evil might have been instantly and absolutely annihilated.
Okay. So you read that one and you go, well, now that sounds like a pretty stark contrast to any length delay is justified, you know, or the Ancients of Days refused to annihilate any being until dot, 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 right? Instantly and absolutely annihilated. Pretty strong stuff. And you're going, well, how can I bring those two together? Like I said, you bring it together because we were told the rule, and this is an exception. It's like, well, I don't know. I mean, when they told us the rule, did they say it in a way where there might be exceptions? And then you go back and you look, you know, there in that last paragraph of the previous section, and notice what it says in that second to the last sentence. Then must the execution of sentence be delayed in accordance with the discretion of the Ancients of Days. Right? Those gods, the Ancients of Days, have discretion. Right? There's a rule that they have discretion. They can make exceptions to the rule, okay? And they have the wisdom to know when it's appropriate to make exceptions to the rule. Yeah. But it should be pretty obvious that, in general, the rule as we've seen it here is the way it ought to be. I mean, is there not mercy? Okay. But there can be, just as definitively as there can be mercy, there can be definitively justice, like they're mentioning here. Absolutely. They use that word. Why? Because mercy is anchored in an absolute, but so is justice. It's not like mercy is somehow higher than justice. No, they're equal. In the sources, the absolutes of infinity, right? They both are predicated on absoluteness. So, it's not like it's automatic that one is always going to trump the other, because, you know, one is anchored in absonity and the other is anchored in absoluteness, say, or something like that. You know, they're both anchored in absoluteness. So, just as absolutely as mercy can manifest, justice can manifest. To reflect a little bit more on this, I mean, it sounds pretty strong to say instantly and absolutely annihilated. If you actually go to the specifics of what was in place during the seventh bestowal, when Michael was incarnate here 2,000 years ago, let's look at that. So if you go to paper 120, in the first section, which old single column, page 1326, paper 120, section 1, paragraph 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 120, section 1, paragraph 5. Let me just read a little bit. So once you find that paragraph, it starts out with and that you may know. But let's skip that first sentence there. It's a rather lengthy first sentence. And, see where what's going on is Emmanuel is talking to Michael. And he's about to state specifically what we were just talking about with a little bit more detail. What was in play? So Emmanuel's telling Michael that he'd just gotten this mandate from the Ancients of Days, and then he says, you see in that second sentence, it starts, from the moment you surrender consciousness upon the beginning of the mortal incarnation until you return to us as supreme and unconditional sovereign of this universe of your own creation and organization, nothing of serious import can happen in all Nebadon. In this interim of your incarnation, I hold the orders of the Ancients of Days, which unqualifiedly mandate the instantaneous and automatic extinction of any being guilty of rebellion or presuming to instigate insurrection in the universe of Nebadon while you are absent on this bestowal. Right. So, you want to talk about going absolutely, you know, to the other side. No hearing whatsoever, right? See, is in play here. There's no time delay, even for 5 minutes to have a, you know, perfunctory hearing or something. Right? Like they said before, and they repeat here, instantaneous and automatic. In other words, no hearings here, no falderal, automatic, okay, and not just guilty of rebellion, but even if they're just presuming to instigate insurrection, the thought definitively is in their head, and they're exterminated. Now, I mean, that being hasn't gone all the way to iniquity. Right? Not even remotely so. I mean, that's still a full-on personality. I mean, they haven't gotten to the point where they've taken that last choice and evaporated, you know, the temple within, and personality is no longer identified. I mean, you know, they may not have even really gotten, to that full-on sin mode yet. Just presuming to instigate insurrection. You remember, Lucifer didn't get to the sin thing until he'd gone public. You know, he was in an evil mode, but he hadn't gotten to sin yet. He, you know, he wasn't consciously aware of, oops, this is not right. He had already gone off to the races. So that is pretty extreme. Just presuming to instigate insurrection. You know, that's a reminder. These are the capital J judges. And supreme justice is in their hands. And if in their wisdom they see that this is the way it should be, like apparently that was the way it had to be while Michael was, you know, incarnate in his seventh bestowal, there can be no, anything even remotely close to any length delay is justified. Right? So it seems to go, you know. So you've got the full spectrum of seemingly an endless delay possibility to none, not even any sort of, right, I mean, it's just automatic, like they said. It's just, you know, I mean, it's not, there's not even, isn't really sort of a, an injection of, of any sort of modifying assessment, right? It's just boom.
What's interesting is that those beings, Lucifer and Satan, who had already rebelled, were allowed to continue mm-hmm. during the bestowal.
I don't really understand. Right. So that's a good point to bring up. The fact that we're talking about them not being apprehended, and that not being apprehended overlaps with his, his complete having to surrender everything, his normal over control of the local universe, surrendering that into the hands of Emmanuel, even in that circumstance, they're not apprehended. Right? So you've got these extremes. You know, as I was saying, the more you reflect on it, the more you see just how broad the span is, you know, of this spectrum between something that seems to have incomprehensible mercy in play, like you're saying, to seemingly none at all. Just boom, absolute law is instantaneously applied, as if there wasn't even time at all. You know, like you were in eternity, you know, and directly subject to absolute law with no temporal buffer, right, in play. Obviously, it's going to take a lot of wisdom to know where in that vast spectrum is what's appropriate. Yeah, and again, that should remind you, you know, if you're feeling it's like, wow, that's really confusing. I don't understand that. How could you know such things? How could you know it? Yeah. So why would any of us think that? Well, we know exactly what should be happening, you know, on the planet right now. And anyone that thinks otherwise should be executed, you know. I mean, when we get into these extreme self-righteous existential modes, you know, about our thoughts, I mean, how absurd, right? I mean, how do you know what happens in this country over the next 5 years, how that relates to what's going on a million years from now in the third super universe? Right. How can we know such things, right? But there is some linkage, right? And the Ancients of Days are considering all that. You know, they're not just considering their super universe, they're considering all seven super universes, you know, throughout all time. And, you know, they're looking at it from a supreme perspective. And so we need to be much more humble. Doesn't mean that we should just say, well, it's hopeless. I shouldn't do anything. But what where you should ply your earnestness, it's to the inner life first. The outer life second. Right? Work on the recognition of personal responsibility and the exercise of self-control. Work on self-mastery first before you get all worked up about thinking you know exactly what you should be doing in the outer life. Right? Let the outer life be a more natural consequence of what's come to be in the inner life. Right? Just like Jesus said, seek first the kingdom of heaven, and all that outer life stuff will happen naturally. He was trying to teach us this 2,000 years ago, but we haven't learned it. You know, we say inner life, schminner life, and off we go, trying to rearrange molecules, you know, in some divine fashion, if so we think. Right? The fact that we're doing that's why there's an emergency. Yeah, that's why there's a civilizational emergency on the planet. It's because of we're unwittingly doing the Lucifer rebellion thing, where the battle cry is self-assertion. Thinking that what we're supposed to be doing in our innate divinity is imposing ourselves on the external world. You know, and we're ripping it apart with our zealous ignorance. We need to be more humble. We need to allow it to be an evolutionary phenomenon. You know, and that means that things will not be in any shape or form that you'll consider perfect for a very long time. You have to be patient for perfection. You can't want it now. You can't want, you know, you've got to let nations evolve. As soon as you start thinking you should be building nations, you've unwittingly gone into the Lucifer rebellion mode. That's just one simple example of endless things that we've started to do like this anymore. We don't think of nations as an evolutionary phenomenon anymore. We think of them as something that we do by fiat. We just rearrange molecules and boom, there's a nation. You know, it's ridiculous. Yep.
I'm curious, back to Gene's point of the difference between. I mean, is it just the case that, you know, this rebellion had gone so far, you know, I mean, they're saying any new rebellion anywhere, but
you know, but this one's okay because it's grandfathered in. Like it.
Well, no, I mean, again, I mean, Michael had already put forward what he wanted done.
Oh, I see.
You know, with the current rebellion. Right, it's just when Michael's out of commission and can't directly, you know, give his say about what to do, Emmanuel has the reins of everything. Well, you know, during that period of time, and just notice it fell back on, on the universe, super universe foundation of the local universe, the capital J Judges. Right, it's going to be run in a very father-like fashion. Where it's going to be very fiat. but you can kind of understand. It's like, well, I mean, for a fallback position, that would seem logical. I mean, you know, when he's not there to make his own free will input, Michael, you know, into what happens, you should just make sure that nothing is done. That would really fundamentally need his full-on free will input, right? So you just, you know, negate, you know, anything that might happen where he would have to definitely step in personally, you know, and make a decision, make a choice. All right. Okay, so let's see. We got all that. But maybe just one other little thing to say there. You'll see we're going to go back in the mode where they're talking about the rule, not the exception. And that should help because you might feel a little bit of fear that you haven't mastered yet when we start talking about things like absolutely annihilated. It's like, well, what about me? What about grace? Am I okay? None of us are going to be instituting some kind of a system rebellion or something. Okay. The rule of any length delay is justified. I mean, the full-on mercy thing is in play for us. You know, there's nothing to get concerned about there. You'll have more opportunity and time than you can even imagine for this to play out well. So no matter how befuddled you might be right now and worried that might be taking you off on a tangent that you don't want to go on very long, don't worry, there's plenty of time. You haven't gone that far astray. The divine executioners are not waiting on your doorstep for you to blink wrong. It's okay. You know, and you know, obviously, in general, they're speaking to us. Yeah, and so they're speaking about the way this balance between justice and mercy really fundamentally applies to us. Right? And it doesn't fundamentally apply to us in this instantly and absolutely annihilated mode. Right? That's just not really of immediate concern to us. You know, so don't let you've got a lot of valid fears to master. Rather than bringing in invalid fears like that one to try to master as well. You know, so just toss that one aside. There's nothing to fear there. especially post-Pentecost, right? For the last 2,000 years, I mean, we all have adjusters by grace now. We all have souls by grace, right? No matter how clueless your mortal mind is right now, your Morancha mindal self is probably just fine. That's what's resurrected. You'll start in the next life just fine, you know. Don't fret it. Just work on doing some positive little things that you can do, and don't fret about whether or not you're going to be saved. Right, that issue was taken off the table 2,000 years ago. All right.
Supreme justice can act instantly when not restrained by divine mercy, but the ministry of mercy to the children of time and space always provides for this time lag. The saving interval between seed time and harvest. If the seed sowing is good, this interval provides for the testing and upbuilding of character. If the seed sowing is evil, this merciful delay provides time for repentance and rectification. This time delay in the adjudication and execution of evildoers is inherent in the mercy ministry of the seven super universes. This restraint of justice by mercy proves that God is love, and that such a God of love dominates the universe and in mercy controls the fate and judgment of all his creatures.
Right. So, I mean, and there you can, again, you know, reflect on how I was explaining the end of the previous section. You know, you have to actually get to the point where it's not a person anymore, where personality isn't identified anymore before it's executed. Because if it's a person, the absolute love of God the Father is identified with that person. That absolute love is not relative to anything. Right? It's just as the Father loves that individual, you know, that person who's expunged the temple within of all meaning and value, and there's nothing left but the empty vessel, but it's still a person. He loves that person just as much as he loves the eternal Son or, you know, any being. Right? There's no relativity to the absolute love of the Father. Right? See, so they're just reminding you of that. See, I mean, so I mean that's the normal play, right? That if there's something to love, it's respected. If it's not a person anymore, love is a personal fact. Okay, then it's a different issue. And we're just talking about raw materials that we can recycle. Okay, a body that's not a person anymore, right? And there's just the inertia of the ongoing energy system. Okay, but you know, and remember, of course, all these issues of the divine execution don't really apply to us either. Remember, I mean, you know, we naturally die. If I were to achieve the near impossible of reaching iniquity in my mortal life here, and no one has to execute me, I die naturally, right? But when you're talking about a celestial being that doesn't have a mortal body, right? I mean, someone has to recycle the, you know, the raw materials, right? Okay, because you know they're innately immortal. The bodies are innately immortal. Okay, let's see what else we have here. Right, so there's that issue again. This helps you to, like I said, I mean, I said what I said at the end of the previous section is a synthesis thing. I'm taking all these little details like this, and you put them together, and you just recognize what is between the lines of those statements. You can see I can pretty much get what I said just by bringing what's in this section, you know, into play in the previous section. Right? It's just a matter of synthesizing the material like that. Okay, but this reminder, this is a good point to bring in the flip side like they did there. I mean, okay, we were talking about if the seed sowing is evil, this merciful delay provides time for repentance and rectification. Okay, yeah. But the flip side is not, well, there's no issues at all in play. I can just lay back, you know, and let it all just roll forward, and one day I'll be laying on my back on paradise. Instead of, you know, in this room. No, you don't ascend to paradise by some automatic process, right? Like they're saying, if the seed sowing is good, this interval, the time interval that you have in front of you then, rather than the possibility of you turning around, that time interval provides for the testing and upbuilding of character. Right? There's a test in play either way, whether the seed sowing is good or evil. It's always a test. Right? You live in an experiential domain. It's fundamentally a test. You have to choose to ascend. You have to choose to get to eternity. There's nothing automatic about it. You are confronted with challenges by the external world, and you have to master yourself to respond in a positive way to those challenges. If you respond to it in a positive way to those challenges, that builds character up. I mean, you're, you know, technically you're grown, that upbuilding of character, you're grown upward. You acquire character in response, positive response to those environmental stimuli. And since you don't live in the central universe, you don't live in the perfect domain of Havona, those environmental stimuli are fundamentally negative. Right? It's not a perfect environment that you're bathing in. It's an imperfect environment. So it's always, you're going to always have to be something besides what the environment would dictate in order for you to go up. It's not natural. It's artificial. It's an art form to take that stimulus and respond to it in a way that's not in kind. A negative environment produces a negative consequence in you, right? And you're a helpless victim of the antecedent causation of this imperfect environment. Now, the whole point is the test. You have free will. You don't have to respond negatively to a negative stimulus. You can choose to respond positively, right? And I mean, anyone can have a positive response to a positive stimulus. Duh. Yeah, there's nothing profound there. Who's going to write a novel about that? Yeah, and the person was bathed in delight, and they felt joyful. The end. Well, you know, it's not a story that anyone admires. Of course, if you have a positive spiritual stimulus, you'll feel joy. That's just natural. But what if you have a negative stimulus, and yet you have a positive response inside of that? Then you will experience a pleasure inside that's transcendent of joy. The true meaning of the word happiness. Happiness results, you know, from positive response to negative stimulus. Joy is just the positive response to a positive stimulus. Happens automatically. Happiness is sublime, right? And you have that liberty, right? We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That pursuit of that kind of happiness I'm talking about. You don't have a right to a positive environment. Right? It's about your inner life. You know, these unalienable rights. Right? If it's about the outer life, it's alienable. Only in the inner life that it could potentially be unalienable, couldn't be taken away from you, not even by God himself. Right? It's unalienable. You have free will. You can pursue a positive response to a negative stimulus. You have that right. Right? That's self-evident. That's what the Declaration is about. And that's what they're getting at here. If the seed sowing is good, the interval provides for the testing and upbuilding of character. Any time that you experience that upbuilding of character, you will experience the sublime thing is what that the word happiness should indicate, rather than something the way we often use the word happiness, so corrupted, almost 180 degrees from what it should mean, like dogs could be happy, you know, or happiness is a warm puppy, or some silly, you know, thing, statement like that. You know, it's a horrendous corruption of the word happiness. It doesn't mean that at all. Only a human can be happy. No animal can be happy. Right? The pleasures that you have that aren't in defiance of, you know, what the stimulus would naturally produce, right? I mean, it's only those responses that are in defiance like that that make you human. You have free will. You're not a helpless victim. And don't let anyone tell you, because pretty much everyone tells you that, right? And they all say, well, there's nothing you can do about it. You're going to have to take this drug, right? You're going to have to rearrange the molecules in your body because you're a helpless victim of antecedent causation. No, you're not. You're a human. You have free will. And you can just choose to be a certain way, to respond in a certain way. Okay? That's your liberty.
It's also your test.
And it's your test. That's the test. Are you failing the test? Right? It must be the evil one, you know, that put all these negative things around me. No, that vast conspiracy is called the handiwork of God. It's your test. Right? How are you doing with your test? Well, are you failing? Are you just succumbing to it? You know? Or are you rising above it? You know? Are you inconcussable, unshakable? That's the test. And remember how it is. Like, well, if the test gets too hard, I can always ask my angel for help. No, remember, those are the fairy tale angels. The real angels foster the test. They're not the guardians, you know, of your now. They're the guardians of your destiny. They're trying to get you to get to destiny. They're trying to, you know, if life is too smooth, they build a speed bump to up the test, right? Because they're concerned about your future. What they delight in is you responding indomitably to the test. And they may very well have been the ones who instituted the specifics of the test. Because you were getting too clever and figuring out ways to go around the speed bumps. Yeah, so they built a wider one and a taller one. God will not be mocked. Right? Can't go around it. Can't get out of the test. All right. Yes. Yeah, we all do. Our ease-drifting souls all hate it when that happens. You know? You just have to take a deep breath and recognize that it's the way it is.
The mercy delays of time are by the mandate of the free will of the creators. There is good to be derived in the universe from this technique of patience in dealing with sinful rebels. While it is all too true that good cannot come of evil to the one who contemplates and performs evil, it is equally true that all things, including evil, potential and manifest, work together for good to all beings who know God, love to do His will, and are ascending paradiseward according to His eternal plan and divine purpose.
Okay. Now, you noticed they just talked about the test, and we just, you know, unpacked it for quite a bit, and it was sounding pretty rugged. Oh, I should check. I mean, there isn't anything on the webinar that they got coming up. Okay, because I kind of had a long thing there that they might have been wanting to comment on. Anyway, they know that we've been kind of reflecting, or should have been reflecting, on these rugged truths. So they do give you that very poetic, you know, ending there of that paragraph. Where it says it is equally true that all things, including evil, potential and manifest, work together for good to all beings who know God, love to do His will, okay, etc. And all that's true. But notice precisely the first part of that I skipped over right there. While it is all too true that good cannot come of evil to the one who contemplates and performs evil. What are they talking about there? Contemplates and performs evil. Okay, that's not just merely evil, right? That's sin. Right? They're saying it's deliberate. Right? You know, so you may remember, there's been many times when I'll bring this up. Right, as it says many times in part four, reminds us, you can overcome evil with good. But you've got to recognize, as they're saying right here, but it is all too true, right, that you cannot overcome sin with good. Yeah, way to collapse that long statement into something more pithy. Right? It's just reminding, it's all too true that you cannot overcome sin with good. You can overcome evil with good, but not sin, because sin is someone who genuinely recognizes what's good and what's bad. It's not, you know, it's not, they're confused and they think that what's bad is actually good. I mean, they objectively have figured it out. It isn't just some mori system calling it good and bad. It really is good and bad, and they recognize it as good and bad, and they're choosing the bad knowing objectively that it's bad. Right? So think about someone who's in that mode. You beam goodness at them. They recognize it as goodness, and they are consciously rejecting that. Right? You can't overcome sin with good, with goodness. Now, if they're just confused, right, and taking a hold of what's bad, thinking it's good, okay, you can overcome evil with good. Right, so you know, if you're wondering where in the book does it say that specifically, Chris, well, there's an example right there. It's all too true. The good cannot come, you know, to, you know, put it all together, to someone who's in the mode of sin. Right? You can't overcome sin with goodness. Stressing this, they're reminding them at the beginning of that paragraph, this whole balance between mercy and justice. You know, don't ever think that there's something just automatic about that. You know, there's always the free will of personalized deity behind all these issues. I mean, choices are always being made. A choice is being made as the balance along the spectrum from mercy to justice. So they were just reminding you of that there. If there's any mercy delays of time, those are the mandate of the free will of the creators. And again, that gets way back around to a while back when you were asking, you know, you're contemplating that difficult thing. How is it that a Lenanadec can actually go to iniquity? You know, don't they have enough education and, you know, an experience? You know, they've been living for billions of years. Don't they get it? A creator son gets it, or a divine counselor gets it, you know, or whatever. But again, remember, Michael isn't automatically, not iniquitous, right? It's his choice, right? Technically, he could go to iniquity. He has free will, has an absolute dimension, right? It can trump anything. Technically, he could go to iniquity, right? But he has innately enough sense of the real big picture that he always chooses properly, right? Doesn't get off on a false tangent in his ignorance, yeah?
What's iniquity?
Okay, so, you're jumping in on some of these things. So if you kind of got the sense a little bit, about the difference between evil and sin. So you have technically objectively what's good and bad. If you desire to do good, but in your ignorance, you take a hold of what's actually bad, that's merely evil. You desired good, but you ended up doing what is technically disrupting to the unity. It's evil. Sin is when you know full well what's going on. And you're picking what you know is bad relative to the whole because you have this self-righteous idea, about it. You're probably picking it because you think for you or your immediate group, this is better. It might be bad, right? But it's better for you. Right, but you know, in the big picture, right, it's in the net for everyone is going to be bad, right? But you don't care, right? You're just worried about yourself or your little group or whatever, you know. If you go into a full mode of that, of sin, where systemically, in other words, every decision, you know, you completely holistically put yourself in that mode where everything that you're doing is like this. This is good, this is bad. Throw the good away, do the bad. And if you make that systemic, that's iniquity.
You have to know enough, though.
Right. And you've got to have enough time to go through that whole process. I mean, it's going to take you a while to, you know, it's like, oh, I hadn't thought about this little area. I need to flip that one around. Right? I mean, to get everything that you do, everything about you...
becomes a lifestyle.
Right, yeah, complete lifestyle solution of sin, right, is iniquity. Not something that any ignorant human like us is going to achieve in some short little life on this planet, most likely. Right? I mean, this is big stuff to get to iniquity, you know, as it's properly defined. But those terms, evil, sin, iniquity, have been used very ignorantly and flippantly forever. And in the Revelation, they're used in very precise fashion and very consequential fashion. When I'm saying iniquity, what it literally means is not equity. And the word equity means conformity with the whole, conformity with the cosmos. See, so you're making yourself completely not that. You are not like the wholeness at all anymore. If you're just merely sinful, part of you is still like the cosmos by grace. You know, we're all by grace started in conformity with the cosmos. And it's only by free will that we can start to flip things around, you know, relative to the wholeness, to the cosmos. Yeah, okay, so I'm on the webinar.
John Stevens made a comment. He said, no thought adjuster. And Winston said, so how can we overcome sin, Chris, in our own lives?
Okay, so, first of all, just, John's comment, that was, back a little bit, we were talking a little bit ago, that just reminding us, remember, always when we're talking about, like, the non-index, like Lucifer, right, they don't have an adjuster. So that's another... issue about how it's easier for them to go off in a wrong direction because they don't have that internal compass. We may not look to the compass and go off in the wrong direction, but at least we have a compass where we could look and know what the right direction is. But think about how tricky this is if you don't have an internal compass, if you don't have that father fragment, within your mind. That can, indicate, that can give you some feedback about whether or not you're going off on a wrong tangent. Okay, so then, so this whole issue, when we say overcome evil with good, remember we're talking about the evil, in others around you, and you bringing goodness into their sphere, and hopefully, through exposure to that, their eyes are open. It's like, oh, wait a minute, I understand. No, I see. I was messed up, wasn't I? You shine light into the darkness around you like that, and you overcome evil with good. But if those others are sinful, right, it doesn't work. You can't overcome sin with goodness. But see, you're talking about others in that mode, Winston. What you're bringing in, what if I'm sinful? What if we're in this mode, like they were just saying? If the seed sowing is evil, this merciful delay provides time for repentance and rectification. Within me, if I've gone to that state of sin, okay, I'm objectively aware of what's good and what's bad, and I'm purposely choosing that which is bad. I've got some rationalization scheme in my head about why this is what I want to do, but I'm still, I'm not in isolation. There's still all kinds of influences being imposed upon me. There's potential for reflection, contrast, all those things going on around me. Plus, I'm encircled in the Holy Spirit. Post-Pentecost, I'm encircled in the spirit of truth, and I've got a father fragment, a thought adjuster within my mind. I have those three spirit ministries, not to mention potential angelic ministry too. I'm in touch with these spirit ministries, so I have internal points of contrast too. I mean, just because I start saying, well, I'm going to definitely, for selfish reasons, pick what is quote-unquote bad, the still small voice inside of you doesn't go away, doesn't go silent. You know, it's still encouraging you, right? I mean, remember, another name for the thought adjuster is the mystery monitor, right? The root of that word monitor is like admonish. And one of the things that father fragment, it's a voice of admonishment. That still small voice, is still there saying, are you sure? I don't think that's a great idea. And we're talking in contrast to just your mere conscience. Just your conscience, relative to a moray system might be, the little voice on your shoulder, the little angel voice as opposed to the little devil voice on your shoulder, whispering in your ear. Chris, the moray system says that's not the right thing to do, right? I mean, you might have that, but you actually have objective spirit ministries that are quote-unquote speaking, right, that are an influence in your mind, encouraging you to see the bigger picture, to respect the bigger picture, to not falsely exalt yourself into the whole. Those influences are still there. So, how you overcome sin within yourself is finally getting up above yourself enough inside that you can put yourself in the proper perspective in a bigger picture and turn around from this foolish track of self-exaltation. It's like, silly. What was I thinking, Right, you get a little humility and you push the self back down in its proper place and you take a hold of the reins again and you start properly directing it. So you can overcome with your free will your sin, but you can't overcome the sin of someone else. It's a free will thing. They have free will. You can't. That's why you can't overcome sin with good, because you can't turn off their free will and say, you don't have free will, I'm going to impose this on you. No, they have free will. Right? Any more than even the Universal Father can say, I'm sorry, Lucifer, I'm going to shut off your free will and impose goodness upon you. No, he has free will. He can tell God to take a flying leap. You have free will. It's your choice. You have free will creativity, and in equal measure, free will destructivity. Right? You can't have one without the other. Right? So I suspect that's what you were looking for, Winston. Tell Katie if there's something else that you'd like me to say there. But that just, remember, you've got the free will inside. You're sovereign in the inner life. Right, so you can always correct things with your sovereignty. You're not sovereign in the external world, so you can't impose yourself on the external world. You can't overcome sin with goodness in the external world. You're not sovereign there. All right, let's see. I think we got everything there, didn't we? Let's go forward here.
But these mercy delays are not interminable. Notwithstanding the long delay, as time is reckoned on Urantia, in adjudicating the Lucifer Rebellion, we may record that, during the time of effecting this revelation, the first hearing in the pending case of Gabriel versus Lucifer was held on Uversa, and soon thereafter there issued the mandate of the Ancients of Days directing that Satan be henceforth confined to the prison world with Lucifer. This ends the ability of Satan to pay further visits to any of the fallen worlds of Satania. Justice in a mercy-dominated universe may be slow, but it is certain.
And so you see kind of the bookends on that paragraph, you know, starting with, but mercy delays are not interminable. And then that final statement. I mean, again, that which is of eternity is getting downstepped into time. I mean, there are, perforce, there are temporal limits to everything in time. Yeah, so reminding you of that fact. That's not obvious. And then notice, remember, they brought up the whole bit about Satan getting interned somewhere there back at the beginning of the 20th century, back in the previous paper. But they're bringing it up again here so that you can reflect on that in this immediate context of, well, what about this bit of not interning them? And all these things that we've been bringing up, see, will help you to differentiate. So, there's a mercy differential in play between Lucifer and Satan. Right? He's extended greater mercy because him being allowed to roam around, go visit the rebel worlds, he's still seeding the phenomenon, if you will, right? I mean, he's still an integral part of getting the wholeness of the rebellion fully manifested so that the wholeness of it can be adjudicated. It's when you think about it like that, it's a pretty obvious fact. I mean, because Lucifer always sent his lieutenant, Satan, out and about. Lucifer would stay back on home base. So obviously, in terms of kind of seeding the phenomenon, Lucifer can be interned much sooner because he's not out and about, right?
Propaganda ministry.
Right. Right. So, it's pretty obvious why it would be. See that that Satan, the internment of Satan, would be delayed because he's really the means by which it's getting fundamentally spread, right? And it needs to get fully spread out. Okay, so, just specifically thinking of that in terms of mercy related to the time, the delay, the variable delay. There's obviously greater mercy in play with the non-angel Midwayer rebels on this planet than it was for the angel and Midwayer rebels. They were taken off 2,000 years ago. But Caligastia, Dalagastia, and whatever other ones, Abaddon, and the others that they don't, describe, there's more mercy in play with them. You may not have thought about it like that, right? As opposed to just, why isn't justice, being imposed? It's like, well, there's a balance between mercy and justice. You just complete your thought in a full logical fashion, right? If justice is delayed, that means there's more mercy in play. Say it in that positive mode, and do I think mercy is a good thing? Am I mad at God for being merciful? But you might be mad at God for not interning them. See, when you think of it in a negative mode, but if you think about it in a positive mode, puts a different twist on it. See, that's why they brought that back into play here. If mercy is desirable, then will mercy be extended to those that you don't want to extend mercy to? And the universe is very glad you're not in charge of the universe. Someone who's that skimpy with mercy. They're glad that someone who's very generous with mercy is in charge. Like I said, we have all of these self-exaltation things. It's like, well, if I was in charge, I would have interned him. There's a reason why you're not in charge. You don't have the requisite wisdom. And that feeds into the title of the next section. See, to specifically state it, I've indirectly said it a number of times, but you've got this whole balance between justice and mercy. And how do you decide what that balance should be? You have to get above justice and mercy with wisdom. Above and encompassing those. That's why this next section is the wisdom of delay, right? I mean, that it's that top-down objectivity, that relationship to the whole, that wisdom that allows you to properly balance between the seemingly conflicting inclinations of justice and mercy. Okay.
Section 5, the wisdom of delay. Of the many reasons known to me as to why Lucifer and his confederates were not sooner interned or adjudicated, I am permitted to recite the following.
Go ahead.
1, mercy requires that every wrongdoer have sufficient time in which to formulate a deliberate and fully chosen attitude regarding his evil thoughts and sinful acts.
Okay, so two things. One, just a little, did you notice in the preface there, Lucifer and his confederates, you know, like we always stress, right? They believed that the unity was in the plane with them, so they're not federating themselves together, they're confederating themselves together. They aren't reaching up to join themselves together. They're reaching horizontally to join themselves together. So why Lucifer's confederates weren't adjudicated? So they're just, it's like, okay, you've said that several times, yeah, but see, they're just building up. We got the justice, we got the mercy. Now, what encompasses those two, you know, that allows you to fully appreciate the picture? Wisdom. And, so now, what you want to do with each of these, we don't necessarily have to forcibly, mechanically do this with each one of these, but, you know, if you're sitting and reflecting on this section, you read one of the bullet points, and then you want to reflect on what's the wisdom embodied in that element, you know, in that bullet point. You know, so mercy requires that every wrongdoer have sufficient time in which to formulate a deliberate and fully chosen attitude regarding his evil thoughts and sinful acts. It's like, well, okay, haven't we kind of already said that already? But they want you to really think of it in terms of what's the wisdom there, not just the mercy requires fact of it, so that you're thinking of it kind of mechanically, right? But a personal encompassment of the situation and the wisdom in that wholeness. What's there? What's that element like? That's what they're trying to get you. They're trying to get you to, you know, foster this, the favorable conditions to be grown into a wiser mind by putting that directly up front. Don't just think in terms of battle between mercy and justice, but try to think about encompassing that in some wisdom. The wisdom of this sufficient time. Okay, again, so, well, okay, isn't it just about, okay, mercy requires time? I mean, what's the wisdom thing? Okay, but think about the individual that's given this sufficient time in which to formulate, right, to get forms in the mind, right? You're allowing sufficient time for this part to get a definitive relationship to the whole, positively or negatively. Right? You can't get a relationship to the whole, quickly. Right? It takes time. We're lowly little parts. Even Lucifer and his confederates are relatively lowly little parts. Right? So, see, that wholeness element, that wisdom element that you can recognize when you're reflecting on the wholeness of what they're up to, that's what they're trying to get you to notice there. And it isn't just, don't just have mercy and justice on a line and you're just kind of moving along a line, but think about what's going on there and how it relates to the cosmos. And then when you think about their relationship to the cosmos, you're thinking wisely about that issue. And that's the point of this. And let me just give you, how we always try to, you want to think about the literal meaning of the words so that you can understand the truth that they're trying to point out, deliberate. You know, they very purposely use that word deliberate because the root there means to weigh. So it's a well-weighed. See, formulated deliberate and fully chosen. Like I said, I mean, you want to get to, you know, to definitive sin, right? You have to objectively have goodness and badness in front of you. You are weighing them well. You know, it's not what you think is good and bad, and you're weighing them. You're weighing them, but you're not weighing well because they aren't really good and bad. But to really have what's good and bad in the two, you know, pans of the scale here, your two hands, right? Deliberate literally means well weighed. You are weighing that balance between goodness and badness well, you know, and you're choosing, right? That fully chosen attitude. You are fully clear-eyed choosing the badness. So I'm talking about that sin, like we were talking about. And just, you know, notice the, when you have sin, you also have evil, of course. Yeah, sin implies evil, but evil doesn't imply sin. Yeah. So here, you know, when we're talking about sin, they can talk about both. You know, the evil thoughts, the disrupted mind, and the sinful acts, right? I mean, this full-on choosing, you know, a person acts, right? You know, that's what's really giving it the definitive animation, right? Is when it's going to this fully chosen phenomenon. Okay, see, so just notice how they're trying to get you to think about all of the of what's in play. See, just the fact that they would bring out both evil and sin, and they're trying to get you to think about it very holistically, all the issues in play, right? So you have a holistic perspective of it, and you're considering the individual's relationship to wholeness. Right? See, well, you get it?
Yeah, well, I see that part of the objective is to attain wisdom. If there's not sufficient time, then wisdom isn't for us. Mm-hmm. It takes time to achieve wisdom. Mm-hmm. We don't achieve wisdom quickly by fiat.
Yeah, not to mention you only get it, you know, as a consequence of tribulation.
Yeah. We have to endure.
Yes. Right, we have to go through a negative experience and respond positively to it, and recognize in retrospect how that all hung together, and come out of it on the other side with wisdom. Yeah. But you know, the immediacy, like I'm trying to point out, is not so much kind of the temporal aspect of wisdom, you know, that you know, and you only acquire it through tribulation and stuff like that. It's just the fact that it's related to the wholeness that we're really focusing on here, see. You know, rather than the mercy part, the justice part, you know, to think about it in a more holistic way so that you can think about justice and mercy at the same time and figure out a balance between them. You know, you're obviously above them and encompassing them. Right? Okay.
2, supreme justice is dominated by a father's love. Therefore, will justice never destroy that which mercy can save? Time to accept salvation is vouchsafed every evildoer.
See, and again, you go, therefore will justice never destroy that which mercy can save. Okay, now if you think simplistically, you go, okay, well, I've found an error in the book. I mean, this sentence is in direct contrast to instantly and absolutely annihilated. You're thinking too simplistically, right? Right. That never destroy. That's the rule. Right. But there's discretion in the hands of the gods. Right. So just, you know, you've got to be thinking sophisticatedly, you know, and not mechanically about interpreting the book, or you'll constantly trip over yourself. Okay. So. You've got, so they're just bringing that back into play, that supreme justice, right, the capital J judges are supreme beings, right, is dominated by the Father's love, therefore will justice never destroy that which mercy can save. Okay, it's like, okay, we're kind of repeating that. Time to accept salvation is vouchsafed every evildoer. That's the part that's trying to get you, again, to think about that time thing and allowing that individual, you know, to have, to come into a potential to be, you know, in relationship with the whole one way or another. I mean, like we've just been saying, you can't get into relationship with the whole, even potentially, you know, instantly. It takes some time, right? So both of them see are really just pointing out the same thing, that time it takes. And it's just whether or not you're going to end up choosing a positive relationship to the whole or a negative one. Right? Time to accept salvation. Right? To choose a... No. On second thought, I think I'll go with a positive relationship to the whole rather than exalting myself into the whole. You know, and... remember when they use the if someone uses the word vouchsafed, you know, it means a little bit more than just granted. It means something is granted in the context of grace, basically. You know, that there is a it's being granted to you because the individual that's granting this to you has the position of offering, you know, you grace. You know, that's the additional element in play, right? That someone above is being gracious to you below.
You know, I've often thought, you know, I'll never have the experience of nurturing something in a womb like a woman does.
Yeah.
However, in my mind, I have the experience of nurturing a thought or an idea, and it grows, and it's like I have this womb of mind that is given to me by grace that can give birth to good or evil.
Yeah.
You know, depending on my
will. And your free will choice, yes.
It's like the law of attraction. The law of attraction, you put out positive energy and positive things come back versus putting out negative energy and thoughts and those negative things come
back. No, no.
Or whatever.
Talking about something a little different than that. But, go ahead.
No, but no, just, but yeah, I mean, you know, just that bit about you know, who gave you that domain within that you're recognizing can be appropriately analogized as a womb, the creative mother spirit, right? I mean, you have a womb-like mind because the mother gave it to you, not the father. Right? That's why your mind has that aspect to it. You know, it has, the father can't bestow capacity, the mother bestows capacity, right? That womb-like nature comes from the mother, like, you know, to like. You know, think about that whole bit about putting negative things out there and, you know, getting negative things back. The really unexpected thing is if I put a negative thing out there and it impinges upon someone who has some self-mastery, and they don't respond in kind, I hit them with negative, and they feed back positive to me. Right? See, that's the thing that you know can trump that sort of natural state. You have free will to respond positively to a negative input, a negative challenge. You remember that line about you're destined to lead a mean and narrow life if you only love those who love you in return. Right? The whole point is to be something artificial, not natural, to be an art form, to do what doesn't come naturally. Jesus had peace that passes all understanding because everyone was looking at him and going, well, that's not natural. That passes all understanding. He's being hit with negative things, and he's not responding negatively. He has a peace that passes all understanding. Right? It's because he's a mastered self. He's what you could be, too. He's not doing anything that you can't do. He was a mastered self before he began to manifest as true God and true man. He did that self-mastery as just man, Jesus the man. A God having self-mastery, that example is of no use to us. Yeah, so what? But having an example of a man as a true man going all the way to full self-mastery is to teach you that you can do that too. He had the limited genetics, that you do. And, he was incarnate here like us. He was subject to the rebellion and the default just like we are. But it didn't define him because he has free will. And just because you're bathed in the orgy of darkness and death doesn't mean you have to be overcome by it. You can be in the world but not of the world. And you especially don't want to be of the world if you happen to be born on a rebellion sphere like we are, where the environment you're born into is not the rosier circumstance that it should have been. It's pretty negative out there. A lot of issues out there, right, that you have to stand apart from by your free will choice. You can't just let yourself melt into them. You have to find courageous and independent cosmic thinking to stand in the midst of that storm. That's your test, right? And just because your test is a little more poignant than someone else's test, is of really no issue. Okay. All right, so again, so just, like I said, we won't belabor all of these, but you can just, what you would want to do with each of these is just reflect on, okay, what's the wholeness there, as opposed to just kind of some of the specific part issues, like the justice part or the mercy part, just in each of them to reflect on, and how time is so essential in an evolutionary domain to come into relationship to the whole, right? Remember, that initial encirclement of the Holy Spirit is the tiniest relationship to the whole by grace that you can be given. And any other relationship to the whole beyond that initial thread has to be achieved through a process spread out over time.
Okay. 3. No affectionate father is ever precipitate in visiting punishment upon an erring member of his family. Patience cannot function independently of time.
Okay, so you can see again that they're trying to just stress the time thing, and just kind of get you to think about a simple thing. It's like, do you want the gods to be patient? Is patience a virtue? you're encouraged to be patient. They probably are patient before you. Right? So patience cannot function independently of time. Patience requires time. Right? I mean, what does the word patience mean if there isn't time? It doesn't mean anything. It's inherently a temporal word, right? You don't need patience if there's no time. You're thinking about some of these other elements, see, that are fundamentally in play. With this relationship to the whole, patience has this inherent wholeness to it. That makes a lot of sense. No wonder, as I'm going up the levels of meaning, the neck of the hourglass is the level of patience. Right? I acquire that initial measure of genuine patience, and I move up into the temple within, up into my first definitive relationship to the whole. See? So you see how they're trying to, again, just stress that physics, you know, that that patience element is this precursor, this fundamental favorable condition that allows there to be a relationship to wholeness. Impatience makes you part-like. Patience makes you whole-like. Right? You pull back on the reins of the headlong part. You know, they said no affectionate father is ever precipitate. That word precipitate, that means you're going headlong. Right? You know, you put your head down the torpedoes, full speed ahead, right? Is what it means literally. You have to pull back on those reins of the part in order to be in relationship to the whole. You have to neutralize that self in order to get into relationship with the whole. That level of patience, that third level of meaning, is also a level of self-neutrality. So it's just, the more you reflect on it, the more it makes sense. And see how they're wanting you to think about this wholeness, the wisdom of it.
Four, while wrongdoing is always deleterious to a family, wisdom and love admonish the upright children to bear with an erring brother during the time granted by the affectionate father, in which the sinner may see the error of his way and embrace salvation.
Just, you can see, you know, you want it. It needs to percolate through the system. Right? That's an essential part of what's going on with everything in the evolutionary domain. So you don't want to short circuit that. It needs to achieve that wholeness again. Okay?
Regardless of Michael's attitude towards Lucifer, notwithstanding his being Lucifer's creator father, it was not in the province of the creator son to exercise summary jurisdiction over the apostate system sovereign, because he had not then completed his bestowal career, thereby attaining unqualified sovereignty of Nebadon.
Again, just a simple thing you can reflect on there. Remember, when he becomes a master son, he literally has some supreme type deity as part of his nature, right? That wholeness of the finite embodied within his nature. So you can see the wholeness is in play just in that simple fashion, you know, and I'm pointing that out. But, you know, bringing in that specific issue we haven't really mentioned here, of, you know, don't forget that, you know, he's not sovereign until he's a master's son, and he wasn't a master's son until 2,000 years ago, right? So 200,000 years ago, right, he was still just a creator son, not a master's son. And, you know, so that technicality was in play. Yep.
It's extraordinary, again, to me that the creator father, Michael of Nebadon, actually is going through the same process as his lowly creatures, the evolution. Right. He's evolved to a master.
He's an evolutionary being too. You know, even though he came from paradise, he's not an existential being. You know, he's an experiential being.
So this pattern goes throughout the whole, goes out the entire cosmos.
Yeah. Right. The only purely existential being is God the Father. Every other being, one way or another, has some experiential nature, you know, the eternal son, conjoint actor, included, you know, they're in part experiential. They're not purely existential like the father.
He does.
Right? Yeah. All right. Let's see here. Did we get everything there? I think we did. Yeah. Okay, let's go to the next one here.
Number six. The Ancients of Days could have immediately annihilated these rebels, but they seldom execute wrongdoers without a full hearing. In this instance, they refused to overrule the Michael decisions.
Right. See, seldom execute wrongdoers, right? Discretion thing. You know, you see they literally use the full hearing thing like I was, mentioning before. I mean, that was the issue when it was instantly and absolutely, right, you're skipping the hearing. But, just notice how they word those two sentences. In this instance, they refused to overrule the Michael decisions. There's nothing automatic, right? They're choosing to not overrule, right? It's the universe is not just a big clockwork machine, right? It's all it's mind made and personality managed. It's a volitional phenomenon in toto. So we're just reminding you of that. But again,
they're given the power.
They're given the power.
They could have the power at any moment if they chose.
Yes, if they chose. But they are wise, right? And in their wisdom, seldom do they execute wrongdoers without a full hearing. That's what's wise. Again, the immediacy of like we're saying, they encompass the fullness of the picture, all the justice issues, all the mercy issues, and they can make this very holistic, wise choice, whatever it might be, in whatever circumstance.
Number 7. It is evident that Emmanuel counseled Michael to remain aloof from the rebels and allow rebellion to pursue a natural course of self-obliteration. And the wisdom of the union of days is the time reflection of the united wisdom of the Paradise Trinity.
Okay, so again, trying to just get you to think about wisdom in play, so you can think about trying to synchronize with that sort of wisdom. But it's interesting the way they say that, Michael, to remain aloof. That's one of the issues that Lucifer had with his creator father, saying he's too like ivory tower, and aloof. So it's got, this notion kind of gets, exacerbated in Lucifer's mind, the way Michael responds. Remember how he said, see, all right, they don't,
He's never my butt.
They say they have all this power over it, but look at me, I'm totally rebelling against them, and they're doing nothing. That's because they really don't have any power. Then the other, the big thing they threw in there, the Paradise Trinity, to think of the wisdom of the Paradise Trinity, and notice how they got you to think about it by going bottom up, having the three infinite persons and then the super additive consequence upward, the united wisdom, right? to get you to think about how much wisdom is inherent in the Paradise Trinity. So that when you think about, remember, all the justice administration comes from the Paradise Trinity, not from the Father, the Son, or the Spirit. Right? And it's like, well, if the justice administration is rooted in the Paradise Trinity, I would like wisdom to be inherent in that source of justice administration. So they're just reminding you of that. I mean, you can obviously see how it must have. I mean, there's wisdom in the three persons, so there must be wisdom in the super additive consequence of the three. It's a little harder to, understand their wisdom when you think about it top down rather than bottom up like that. But anyway, that's the whole point of that. Remember that one of the functions of the Paradise Trinity is justice administration. All those justice administrators are Trinity origin beings. So they're reminding you of the inherent wisdom in that justice administration. Okay? Remember, they, like the Ancients of Days, the Unions of Days are Trinity origin beings.
Okay. 8. The Faithful of Days on Edentia advised the Constellation Fathers to allow the rebels free course, to the end that all sympathy for these evildoers should be sooner uprooted in the hearts of every present and future citizen of Nerlashadeck, every mortal, Marantia, or spirit creature.
Again, faithful as the days are Trinity origin beings. One notch down from the Union of Days. All right, so you have that wisdom coming down from the Trinity in the Ancients of Days, in the Union of Days, and in the Faithful of Days. Just pointing out the specifics of how that wisdom is getting expressed on the different levels. This whole bit of allowing the rebels free course. And then they're getting you to reflect on the wisdom of that. See, to the end, that all sympathy for these evildoers should be the sooner uprooted in the hearts of every present and future citizen of Nerlashadeck. Right? Trying to get you to think about the wisdom of that delay, like the title of the section says. Which would be the wiser course? Getting it done sooner or later? Sooner, pretty obvious, right? That would be the wiser choice. And see, but it's like, wouldn't it get done really soon if you just summarily, yes, but that's not in play. So you take the summary judgment off the table of the instantly and absolutely annihilated thing, right? You let it play out, and it will come to an end quicker if you don't thwart it in any way. Let it fully spread, because it's like they mentioned up above there, it's a self-obliterating phenomenon, right? Because it isn't an alternative something that's spreading, it's a nothing that's spreading. Evil's the absence of goodness, not another something. It's an absence of something, and so it's inherently self-obliterating. It just naturally will run out of gas, as it were, right? As it spreads out. Finally, it just spreads as far as it's going to spread. And you get that. If you haven't put roadblocks to that, it does it sooner rather than later. Just let it take its natural course, and get through this. Get it out. Get it out of the system quicker. Okay. So you'll see the next two. We're just going to do those next two. Are in the same mode of trying to get it out of the system sooner rather than later.
9. On Gerasim, the personal representative of the supreme executive of Orvantan counseled Gabriel to foster full opportunity for every living creature to mature, a deliberate choice in those matters involved in the Lucifer Declaration of Liberty. The issues of rebellion having been raised, the Paradise Emergency Advisor of Gabriel portrayed that if such full and free opportunity were not given all Nerlashadeck creatures, then would the Paradise quarantine against all such possible half-hearted or doubt-stricken creatures be extended in self-protection against the entire constellation. To keep open the Paradise doors of ascension to the beings of Nerlashadeck, it was necessary to provide for the full development of rebellion and to ensure the complete determination of attitude on the part of all beings in any way concerned therewith.
Okay, so the main thing here, you notice it's like, wow, they're bringing in the whole constellation. I thought it was just a system rebellion. Remember how back in the Constellation paper we talked about how the system sovereigns all get together on Adentia periodically, right? And Satan, as the lieutenant of Lucifer, as a system sovereign, would go up to those conclaves, right? I mean, that's kind of one of the things we know about that they're speaking to here. Yes, they cut off the circuits so that you don't have direct communication from our system to other local systems, but at the very least, we know about how the system sovereigns get together, right? And so, the rebels can make their case to the other system sovereigns to potentially join in their rebellion and make it more than a system-wide rebellion, right? You know, let's get the whole constellation, you know, in on this. And see, the council was to open up that possibility. Now, you know, it didn't happen. No other system sovereigns joined the rebellion.
And he got rotten seed.
Okay. But when they're talking about on Gerasim, the personal representative of the supreme executive of Orvintan, you probably don't remember who that is. If you can go back and read about them and remind yourself, it's in paper 24, section 5. You know, you don't have to go there, but it's the assigned sentinels. There's that section on the assigned sentinels. Remember, at the local universe level, they're called the associate inspectors. Associate inspectors at the local universe capital level, and then the assigned sentinels at the local system level that are tied to the supreme executives, like they're saying there. So just that little tidbit if you're trying to remember what that was about. So you've got all these advisors. You've got the Union of Days, Faithful of Days, you know, the assigned sentinels, all these different advisors, you know, advising in the same way. No, just give it free rein. You know, don't try to thwart it. Let it go, and it'll get out of the system sooner rather than later. Let everyone work it out of their system.
Pardon the pun.
Yeah, pardon the pun. okay. And then it was necessary to provide for the full development of rebellion. And to ensure the complete determination of attitude on the part of all beings in any way concerned therewith. Just notice the holistic, you know, way they're talking there, both externally and internally, right? Everything getting to a full wholeness of manifestation. Okay, and then the final one we'll do tonight here.
10. The Divine Minister of Salvington issued as her third independent proclamation a mandate directing that nothing be done to half cure, cowardly suppress, or otherwise hide the hideous visage of rebels and rebellion. The angelic hosts were directed to work for full disclosure and unlimited opportunity for sin expression as the quickest technique of achieving the perfect and final cure of the plague of evil and sin.
Okay, so, and the Creative Mother Spirit, you know, steps in unison with these other voices. Same thing, directing the angels in this same mode. Now, they aren't specific, but I guess we are to assume that her third independent proclamation is because this is the third system rebellion, and that she did the same thing in the other two previous system rebellions. Well, you know, it's not certain, right? I mean, you know, remember Michael was kind of involved in those other two system rebellions with some of his other bestowals, and, you know, so you can't say for certain that it was the same, you know, for those two. But that's probably the first assumption one would make about why this is the third. Okay, so there's that. But then, you know, okay, so you have this whole bit, half cure, cowardly suppress, or otherwise hide, right? I mean, that's when it says directing the angels to work for full disclosure, right? So that's just shorthand for all of that, right? Right. So on the one hand, they're working to have this full disclosure of what's in play, and the other thing, unlimited opportunity for sin expression. You know, I bring that up all the time. I hearken back to this line. I mean, because that is just so not what the fairy tale angels in our stories are like, right? It's difficult enough to think about them as speed bump builders, right, to foster your opportunity for testing. But to know that they've been directed. You know, so you see all of the sin expression that's going on the planet. And you probably haven't thought in those terms of that one of the main reasons why it's so ubiquitous is because the angels have been directed to make sure that there is full disclosure and unlimited opportunity for sin expression. You know, the angels aren't trying to make it so there's less sin expression. They're making sure that it's maximized. And it's like, well, that seems really unwise. Think of all the innocent people that are going to suffer, you know, in a maximized sin expression environment.
Yeah. Free will.
Can you get a big enough picture so that you can see the wisdom of that? Right? And it's fundamentally, even if you can't directly see the wisdom of it, you know that the wisdom fundamentally is it will get done sooner rather than later. Right? Do you want innocent people struggling, forever? Or would you like to get it out of the system sooner rather than later? And you got to let it loose and play out. And make sure that it's fully in play. You know, and just see that. And you know, this one is just so definitive. The quickest technique for achieving the perfect and final cure, the plague of evil and sin. You know, it sounds very ominous, right? It's like the final solution. You can't help but think of ominous things, you know, statements in history like that.
Well, if it weren't done, there'd be pockets.
Right, you don't want these pockets. You want to get it, you know, whole in a holistic expression. Yeah.
But what is the cure? Is not the cure actually to achieve wisdom and to choose?
Right. I mean, there's all the wisdom that's going to result in the people, you know, in the midst of this, you know. But just you want it to get to this fullness of suppression. You want to get it completely expressed, because until it's completely expressed, it's not going to come to an end. It has to get to a completeness. Right? That's the whole point. The more you block that, the longer it's going to take to get to completeness. You won't stop it from getting to completeness. It will go to completeness. There's an overriding influence in the universe towards that holistic end. To think in those terms about why it is that you seem to still be languishing in a world of darkness. It's for the greater good, right? We're still in the midst of it, working out sooner rather than later. All right. We'll get to those other two and the final section next time. You'll see why it's kind of handy to put these other two separate. spend some time just reflecting on, on some of these over the next week. Try to get yourself to step through the details like we've been going through tonight. See if you can, get more objective about this. You know, it's part of our test on this kind of a world to achieve some measure of objectivity about why do bad things happen to good people, right? I mean, humans have been wrapped around the axle and beleaguered by that question forever. You know, can you get yourself above that, you know, and into a mode where you can trust more and, humbly trust more? And put that question behind you. Take a hold of the situation and respond positively to the environment, no matter what it is. It doesn't matter that it's a benighted sphere. Right? Forget about that. If only it wasn't such a benighted sphere. Oh, I could do such great things. You know, you got to just stop that regretting the past, whining over the present, because it means you're also vainly hoping for the future, right? You aren't open to the real future when you're so stuck in the past and the present like that.
You're always whining.
Right. All right, let's take a moment here, everyone.